Network proudly presents The Jay's Blade Show with your host, CyberGolf.com's own Jay Clemmer, and co-starring a galaxy of the golf and sports world's greatest names as a special guest. Yo, 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 this is your main man, DJ Q, telling you to put your hands together for your friend and mine, Jay Clemmer.
All right, thank you, DJ Q, for bringing us back into the show. He's absolutely right. I am Jay Flama, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. So a big thank you goes out to our last guest, Matt Korkorakis, a member of Forest Gate Country Club, who went to the United States Amateur Championship this year and played very well, and he was a lot of fun to have on. And now it's time to move on to our second guest for segments 3 and 4. An old friend has come back to the show, one of the true greats. He spent many years at the New York Post and then at the New York Daily News. He once called the Super Bowl score and winning and losing teams, missing by 1 point a few years ago, pre-season, and now he's author of a brand new bestseller out this month. Please give him warm Jay's Plays. Welcome back to Hank Gola. Hank, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jay. That was not my greatest prediction, however.
Okay, what my was greatest... your greatest?
Y.E. Yang.
That
is the same reaction I got when I said Y.E. Yang. They laughed at me.
Well, I'm laughing for two reasons. Number one, right before, like a few months before, Yang and Woods went head-to-head in that final out of the PGA Championship. They also went head-to-head in the final round in China. I think it was some HSBC tournament. And who mm-hmm. won? Yang won!
Yeah, Yang won a Honda that year, too. So I actually picked him as a dark horse. I was on an interview in Virginia, radio station in Virginia, and they said, "Who's your dark horse?" I said, "I'll tell you what, I really like Y.E. Yang." And he started laughing at me. He said, "Who?" And I had to explain who Y.E. Yang was. But the funny thing about that, so it was taped, and then after Y.E. Yang hit that tremendous shot out of the bunker with the rescue and just stunned. Actually, Tiger's never been the same since Y.E. Yang beat him. But once he did that, now there were like two radio stations called me back and said, "Here's the guy who picked Y.E. Yang at the PGA." So I remember doing one in Raleigh, maybe one in Houston, but they played the clip of me calling Y.E. Yang. So
I'm gonna stick on. I'm sorry. After further review, the play stands as called. I think your greatest prediction was preseason when you said Packers 31, Steelers 24, and it was 31-25. You didn't factor in that Pittsburgh would go for two. I mean, we've all
that
hit the dark horse occasionally, okay? Yeah, you had Y. Yang, I had Webb Simpson, so, you know. But that's our job. We're supposed to do that.
My Yang beats your Simpson. I'm sorry.
And I tell you what else beats everybody right now, okay, is your new bestseller. Hank, congratulations. The whole world is abuzz with your wonderful new book, City of Champions. Tell us a little bit about this new project.
Well, I hope it's a bestseller. That would be nice. Not yet, but we have gotten some wonderful pre-publication reviews. And the book has just been shipped from the printer, so it will be in stores soon and on Amazon. But it's the story of the 1939 National Championship High School football game. My alma mater, Garfield High School, went down and defeated Miami High in the Orange Bowl on Christmas night, 16-13 on a field goal with 2 minutes left by a guy named Benny Babula. Now, if you grew up in Garfield like I did, Benny Babula was, you know, he was legendary. I remember as a kid growing up in Garfield, my father had told me about this game, and, you know, that was the rite of passage for kids in Garfield. You knew about, this is the first thing you knew about sports, what your father told you, that the Garfield won the national championship in 39. Well, Babula had taken over his father's meat distribution business then, and when I was a kid, and we would hide behind the bushes and just watch him, as he would sling over a side of beef on his shoulder, and he had this long white apron, blood-stained, and he'd carry that thing into the butcher shop. It was something to behold. But then again, so was the field goal in 39. I'm very proud of it. It's not just a sports book, not just a football book, but it really examines the social history of the country in two distinct areas, Garfield, New Jersey, Miami, Florida, during the Depression and then on the eve of World War II. So there's a lot of stuff in it that's not football, but every part of it is tied into this game. So
Well, you mentioned a really important point there. One of the great parts about the book is how you bring in the backgrounds of both of the students and parents that went to each of these schools and sent their kids to each of these schools. And you set up the dichotomy between, you've got the industrial Italian, Polish, and Eastern European families that came into Garfield, New Jersey, and you have the slightly more affluent, more vibrant, more colorful families from Miami. So it really was like two different pages of Americana and American history coming to a head in a complete clash of cultures.
Yeah, that's right. Garfield was, these were the sons of immigrants who came in the great waves of the through Ellis Island in the early part of the 20th century. They came to Garfield because it was a big textile mill area, Garfield and Passaic, and so they supplied the elbow grease for that machinery. So these kids would grow up in households where they were speaking their father and mother's native tongue. My dad was the same way. My father didn't speak English until he got to kindergarten in Garfield. He was of that era, but he did not play in that team. He was one of the guys that dropped out, actually, to go to school and get a job to help support the family during the Depression. That happened a lot. But, yeah, all of these kids, that they were pretty typical. But once they got to high school, once they got to grammar school, in fact, they played American sports and they became Americans. The emphasis from their parents was that you will assimilate, you will be an American. This is a great country. This has given us our opportunity here. So that was that side of it. And then down in Miami, it was also kind of a migratory thing. Miami blossomed at the before the 20th century. The railroad finally got there. Flagler's Railroad got down to the southern end of Florida. And people began moving in for the opportunity there, but they mostly came from other parts of the South. So Miami was suddenly became like a boom town in the 20s with land and the skyline just kind of exploded from the dirt, from the sand. Most of those people were not industrial. They didn't work in factories or anything. They were on the outskirts. They were farmers or they had dairy farms. Otherwise, most of the kids, their parents or their fathers were white collar workers. It's a fascinating dichotomy. The fact that they came together. I mean, this is the one thing that could have gotten these two places together was high school football, because they had such a love for high school football in both of these cities.
Tell us a little bit about the game itself. It had to be a heck of a slobber noggin back in 39, a 16-13 game.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing was, of course, you know, these kids from Garfield, they got on the train, which must have seemed like a spaceship to them. Only a handful had actually been, only a handful had been out of New Jersey, into the city would have been a huge, huge trip. I know when they got to Philadelphia and the train stopped at the station, one of the kids said, is this Miami?
It had to be a little bit cold, my friend.
But it was warm when they got there, when they got to Miami. And just imagine these kids getting off this train, for instance, seeing a palm tree. They'd never seen a palm. There was no TV. You didn't see palm trees. There were, you know, you maybe got to a movie, but maybe you saw it in a picture in a book somewhere. But the whole landscape must have seemed foreign to them, as if they were on another planet. So they overcame all of it. They overcame the heat. They overcame the 70 whatever it was, the heat in Miami, and they ended up winning the game 16-13. And Miami had given up only 13 points all year. playing a intersectional schedule throughout the South. They play teams from throughout the South. They were one of the finest teams in the area then, and they didn't they couldn't find competition in Florida, so they had to go outside the state to find competition. So it was a fascinating game. Davey Eldridge and Benny Babula were the two stars. Davey Eldridge was Miami's. They call him Little Davey. He didn't have a lot of power, but man, he could take off and just escape out of their short punt formation, which was kind of a variation of the single wing. So it was Little Davey against Big Benny.
It seems almost a little bit like, you know, David versus Goliath in a manner of speaking here. You got this big powerhouse from the South that nobody can keep up with. That they got to travel all over the South to play, you know, huge teams from other states. And you got little tiny Garfield, all these kids that are, you know, the kids of immigrants, sons of immigrant families that are just trying to learn how to assimilate and learn how to play football. How did they prepare to play this juggernaut? Did they, you know, have films? Did they have reports?
Well, they did.
Did they scout them?
Well, their coach was a guy named Art Augauer. He's a very charismatic guy. He was himself an immigrant from Germany. He was born in 1900, came over in 1906 with his family. Ended up being a star at Clifton High School, which is right next to Garfield, but it was one of the kids that, you know, back then there were no age limits. He actually played for Clifton as a sophomore in 1922 when he was 22 years old. But he was
okay.
A tremendous, I mean, he played four sports. He caught on the baseball team, set the state stolen base record, and then, you know, jumped on the bus and ran in a track meet. It was that type of thing. But when he got to Garfield, he had gone to Tusculum College and the Savitt School of Physical Education, and he was just a great, great coach. And not only that, the kids looked up to him. Back then, they revered coaches. You know, the parents back then, they didn't have time to go to the games or anything. So the coaches were kind of like your second father, especially if they were good ones. And our guy was a very good one. They just loved the guy. He loved them too. So he was an early proponent of game films. In fact, the guy he had taking game films for him is a guy named Michael Rahak. I have color film of the 1939 Garfield-Passaic game that will just blow you away. It was taken at Passaic Stadium, 11,000 people there. They were both undefeated at the time. And it looks, when you watch it, it looks like it might have been taken like 2 weeks ago. It's that good. And it just brings 1939 with these the Garfield wore gold uniforms. Passaic would wear red and blue. And it just brings the era alive. It's unbelievable to watch it. Well, anyway, Rahak ended up going to war as a combat photographer. And when he got out of the Army, he got a job in the newfangled TV industry and ended up being a cameraman on some of the legendary TV shows like Phil Silvers and The Avengers. And Argyle was the guy who kind of gave him his start as a photographer. Pretty cool stuff.
Fascinating stuff. Now, tell us a little bit. We got one more question we can get in before the break. But
right.
Give us a little bit of the ebb and flow of the game. Okay, who got ahead? Who came from behind?
Yeah, well, Garfield got ahead early. They ended up taking a 13-0 lead on a naked reverse, a great play that they sprung on Miami. And then the Miami came back in the second half, and ended up tying the game. Eldridge got around, they got loose for a 78-yard touchdown, and it seemed as if the heat was taking its toll and that Garfield was getting tired. But, they put together one last drive with Babula being the workhorse. And in an era when, field goals were as rare as snowflakes in Florida, Benny called the play and called a 22-yard field goal. And kicked it through. So kind of
he kicked it himself.
Yeah, he kicked it himself. He was a triple threat back in the single wing.
So wait, they must have been on the 5 yard line to kick a 22-yard field goal.
Well, they were close. They were actually they were on the 15-yard line because back then
the goalposts were 3 yards back. Yeah, okay, that's
right.
I forgot about that. Until people ran face first into them and they decided maybe we better move and then they put padding around them so that idiot receivers could put cell phones phones underneath the padding and call themselves after making a touchdown.
but you know, the interesting part about this game is it's on YouTube. If you go to YouTube, you could actually see Benny kicking the field goal through the uprights. It's somebody put it on because this was Ray Hack's game film of that game down in Miami.
Well, you know, since we're going to be looking things up, tell us where we can buy the book and tell us where we can read your articles and other writing in the meantime.
Just go to Amazon.com or go to my website. Better yet, go to HankGola.com. You just click on the book and you'll get to the book page, the big book there. That'll take you to the City of Champions page. And you could order it either on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Indie Books. It'll also be in most of the stores. Probably in a couple of weeks it'll start showing up in bookstores around the country.
We're talking with Hank Gola. I'm Jay Flemmer. You're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. We will be right back.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back at the second half of the show in just a minute. This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
All right, thank you, DJ Q. One more time, everybody. I am Jay Flemmer. This is the last segment of Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. We are yucking it up with Hank Gola, formerly New York Daily News and New York Post, and now soon to be best-selling author of City of Champions. Welcome back to the show, Hank.
Okay, Jay.
All right, so he knows, he's given the big sigh because he knows what comes now. It's the trivia question. Jay's Plays is brought to you by JB's Best Hot Sauce. It is the spiciest, the boldest, the most flavorful hot sauce out there on the market. It's by a golf writer, so you know it's good. When it says JB's, in fact, it's not good. It's the best. All right, so it's football season, Hank, and my football picks and my football picking column are on a roll. I am 7-0 this week and 20-5 on the season with one game left, and that puts my teaser picks, because you're very much aware that we do teasers here at Golf News Network, or at least that's how I work my column. And that puts us at a really fantastic 9-3 on season. So here is your trivia question. Who is the only pick of a game, as opposed to an over-under, what's the only straight-up pick, the only team that I've lost with this season? And I'll give you the question again. Not including the over-under picks, I've lost only one pick this season. Which team blew it for me?
You want to name the team, not the exact game.
Name the team. Which team was the one that I picked that I lost?
It would be very fitting if it was the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Is that your guess?
That's my guess.
No. The Steelers are 1-0 for me. They won last week.
They beat
the Browns. I have to say, by the way, okay, one of the other things I do is I'm 3-0 betting against the Browns this season, okay?
Are you?
If the Patriots win, if the Patriots beat the Bills tonight, it'll be 3-0. The only team that's let me down all season was the Buffalo Bills, okay? I took them. I had 13 points in the Bills against the Colts, and I needed 33. They got beat 37-4 or something stupid like that.
I remember that game well. Yeah.
Now let's go over, since we're talking football, okay, and since you are a football guru, okay, you got the Swami and you got that Johnny Carson Carmack, you got them all to hell beat, okay? So let's see what you think of this week's picks, okay? So far we're going to go with Chiefs -2 at Browns, again, betting against the Brownies.
I love it.
What do you think? Okay, how come you love it?
Well, I mean, the Browns are in disarray. They just can't. I mean, Baker Mayfield has come back to earth after his after that first Jets game where he took him by surprise. And I mean, look, Baker Mayfield against Patrick Mahomes, it's a no-brainer. 2 points, that'll be over in the first half, end of the first half, halftime.
The Browns' offense has not improved at the rate that we had thought that their defense was going to improve.
No, their defense,
they're a little bit better.
Defensively,
Sorry, go ahead.
Look, Myles Garrett is amazing. The Browns, their front's very good. They can be beaten in the secondary, and that's what Roethlisberger did last week with his receivers. So, that was just a preview of what Patrick Mahomes and those guys are going to do to the Browns. Because Mahomes has a quick release, and I don't even know if Myles Garrett's going to get to him. I mean, that thing comes out fast.
So, yep. And they've got speed, much like Pittsburgh does. Pittsburgh and Antonio Brown, Chiefs got Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, I mean, they got everything, really. And they got Andy Reid's a great coach. He's got this tremendous toy this year in Patrick Mahomes, and he just schemes games really well with a lot of disguises, a lot of different looks. They're going to just take the Browns apart.
Yep, they're going to put the boots to them. All right, here's the other one to pair with that. How about Panthers even hosting the Buccaneers?
Well, it depends if Ryan Fitzpatrick's going to be the quarterback. I mean, after Jameis Winston threw four picks in a game, in a very winnable game in Cincinnati, I mean, you know, Cincinnati's been winning games, but they're certainly not.
They're not impressing
people. They're playing above
their
heads. Yeah, they're not killing. And their defense is a question mark. I mean, Jameis Winston was actually moving the team, and then all of a sudden, you know, he threw this stupid-ass pick. I'm sorry. Can I say ass?
You can, yes. You most certainly can. You can definitely say stupid-ass, too, and in particular when describing terrible interceptions like Jameis Winston.
Yeah. So anyway, but I'll tell you what. Ryan Fitzpatrick is real. This guy this year, there's something to him. So the Panthers are very tough at home. I mean, they took a really good defense apart last week in Baltimore. They've got, I don't have it in front of me, they've got some incredible record against the spread at home. So, yeah, I like it, but I don't love it. How's that?
Good enough. Speaking of the Ravens, how about Ravens-Steelers over 41?
Those games, yeah.
This is not 2009 anymore.
Yeah, I know. The Ravens came in last week with the top-rated defense, scoring and yardage-wise, and I think they got exposed a little bit. I could see these teams moving up and down the field on each other a little bit. The Steelers' defense, as you know, especially in the back, is not great.
It's not great. They're terrible.
Yeah.
Okay, Artie Burns. He lives up to his name because he gets burned every 5 minutes. Okay.
Yeah.
Even the worst of the bloggers says what everybody just is thinking, and that is Artie Burns is not an NFL caliber defensive back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
they can't cover anybody.
You're right. They're terrible. Yeah,
they can't tackle anybody. They can't cover anybody. They drop interceptions and they get confused on coverage. Other than that, they're fine. They gave up 49 points to the Jaguars twice. Not once, twice. Okay,
yeah.
Give up 49 points. You don't deserve to win, let alone be AFC champion. So
they're playing better lately. I'll give them that much. They are playing better lately, which you would expect under Mike Tomlin. I've covered a lot of Ravens Steelers games over the years, and they tend to go either one way or the other. They're either drag them out,
slobber noggin, low score, or they're a shootout.
Right, exactly. So I think looking at this one, I like the over 40. Yeah, I think that we're going to go
right now.
Down the field this time.
I do. When their defenses come back, that's when you shift back to the under. But the Steelers became an over team last year. That's when they made the transition from an under team to an over team. All right, last pick right now, and then I'm going to make two more later on, but haven't picked them yet. Right now, how about Seahawks plus 4.5 hosting the L.A. Chargers?
Giving me pause. I love Phillip Rivers.
I really like Phillip Rivers, too, but what about on the road in Seattle?
Well, because the Chargers always play on the road. They never play a home game.
True.
Even when they're home, the fans are against them. They play 16 road games every year.
Okay, but we're talking about Seattle.
I know, but... I think they've been playing well actually lately. It was a very impressive win in Detroit. Their offensive line, which was their big problem early in the season, seems to be a little solidified now. Russell Wilson is a gamer. He'll make plays everywhere, and certainly
is there a reason why you don't think that Chargers are going to turn into the Chargers, if you know what I mean, and do Chargers things, like lose?
It's not. No. I think the Chargers are a little different this year. I sense there's a little different mentality there. I'm not saying it's a bad pick. I mean, I'll tell you what. This is a game I'd stay away from. And you know, I do a look but don't touch every week, and this might fall into that category because it could be a trap game. And like I said, the Chargers, the road doesn't matter to them. They've become a pretty good road team because there's no home field for them. They're always on the road. And I know the deal in Seattle. It's a hellhole for opposing teams and get really loud and everything. But I'm not completely sold on Seattle.
Now, mind you, this is after I've won two consecutive weeks with the Chargers, okay? I've won back-to-back weeks picking the Chargers, but I did not like what I saw out of them in London. I did not like how they almost lost a one game against an inferior team. And that's what I said in my column last week. I said, this is a litmus test. Can they beat an inferior team that they need to beat to be contenders, not pretenders? They won the game, but they didn't convince me because they really should have lost the game. They very well could have lost that game.
Yeah,
and
well,
at the very least, it should have been an overtime, which would have been a loss against the spread for me. Because remember, they only count four quarters in these points.
I think they actually had control of that game until that last drive when Tennessee went up the field. I didn't think it was an unimpressive performance.
But that's how Chargers lose games. They play 57 minutes.
Yeah, I know.
How many times have the Chargers lost games because they played 57 minutes, 58 minutes? Except, of course, when they played Pittsburgh, they lose them by the 29. So, let's shift gears. One last topic. Let's talk a little bit about the golf season, okay? Give me the three most impressive things you saw all golf season.
The European Ryder Cup team. I think was fantastic. I got to say Tiger's win. I've had my doubts about Tiger, but that was pretty impressive. And then, of course, Brooks Koepka.
I am reluctantly going to pick Brooks Koepka as my player of the year, but I gave a long, long look to Francesco Molinari.
Well, that was impressive, too. If I had to pick a fourth one, if you asked me to name four, that would have been it. I think, and of course, that goes into my Ryder Cup, European Ryder Cup team.
It does, okay. You could say Koepka won two majors, but we really ought to count a solid Ryder Cup as a major two as well, okay. You very well could have one year given it to Henrik Stenson as opposed to Dustin Johnson, but we need to be a little less ethnocentric in the United States, I think, when giving these awards. But Koepka earned it without question.
He won two majors.
It was impressive.
How many guys win two majors in a year? You know, you got to give it.
Yeah, he won at Shinnecock. Okay, yeah. That was, and he won after being five over par. Or was it seven over par? I think it was seven over par.
Right.
He was at one point before he finally fought back. Okay, with 27 holes gone, he looked like he was going to be slamming the trunk and driving off. And instead, he had the trophy in the passenger seat. So
Koepka is the guy we saw coming when Tiger hit the gym. Before, I mean, Tiger basically transformed the way golf pros worked out. But we all said that one of these days there's going to be this super guy, this super athlete, big, and that's who Koepka is. He's amazing.
He is
hit a golf ball. It's incredible.
Yeah, he is enormous. Okay, Popeye-sized muscles bulging out of those one size too small shirts. So
yeah.
Now, so give us a couple of things to look forward to for next year.
Well, I think. You don't know where they're going to come from, but the young players continue to impress. For instance, Xander Schauffele, who just won again, right?
Yes, he did,
and really played well at the Open Championship. I'm not going to say British Open, but at the Open
right.
Championship. You know, until that last hole, he was right there hanging with Molinari. That's what impresses me the most, that these young guys come up now and they're just so ready to take things on and win. It used to be, you know, used to hear, well, they need a few years of seasoning. They need to learn how to win. They don't need to learn how to win now. They learn how to win in college, and then they're ready to win on the PGA Tour. They're just so, I guess they're prepared differently now. I guess they're just prepared almost professionally from the start, from the time they're little kids. And
they've been playing on the junior tours.
Yeah. So by the time they get to there, they're ready. They don't need to get ready. They're ready.
I will throw out one more thing. Actually, I'll throw out three more things I'm looking very, very, very much forward to next year.
Yeah.
Pebble Beach, Northern Ireland, and Bethpage.
Right. Yeah, those are three great venues. I'd love to see what Northern Ireland's going to be like. It's a great golf course, but, you know, it'll be cool because a new spot on the road. It'll look great. The galleries are going to be fantastic. Pebble Beach is always good you've played Pebble. A lot of people have. It's kind of a pedestrian golf course until you get out there a little bit. And all
well, once you get out Pebble there, Beach. Okay, I got three words for everybody. 8, 9, 10.
Yeah.
So it's pretty amazing. Hank, thank you for coming on the show. Everybody, thank you for listening. We'll have you back on in a couple of months. Tell us how the book is doing. And in the meantime, before we let you go, who is your Super Bowl pick this year?
Kansas City and the Rams. And I'll say in a high-scoring game, so because they all are high-scoring games now in the Super Bowl, unfortunately, Kansas City 42 and L.A. 39.
I am out of the running because I had Jacksonville and San Francisco. I thought Garoppolo was going to be the real thing. I really did. Okay, he impressed me so much. I thought they were going to do the turnaround thing. So and they turned around.
They turned around and ran.
this
Thursday may be the worst Thursday night game in recent memory. Battle of the Bay. The Raiders play the 49ers.
So Oakland and San Francisco.
That's your DVRs.
Yeah, I thought about making a pick in that game, but then I thought, why bother? That's for degenerates only. Everybody, we will see you again soon on the Jay's Place Show. Thank you so much.
We're at the end of another great Jay's Place Show, but thank you all so much for joining in. It's no fun doing this to an empty room, but it sure is fun doing it for all of you guys, so thanks so much. I want to thank Fish for kindly letting me use their great music as a theme song for the show. Thanks, guys. I want to thank CyberGolf and Golf News Network, cybergolf.com/writerscorner, including me and all the other fine writers, and thegolfnewsnet.com/radio. Take us home, DJ Q.
Tune in next time for another great Jay's Play show on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
Thanks, guys. Catch y'all next time.